Yours to Protect on iRadio.
Now, of course, you will have heard us talk about this quite a lot over the last couple of weeks. Ours to Protect, it's a brand new weekly feature on iRadio's The Hub, and it's a collaboration of local and regional broadcasters from across the country. To tell us more about this exciting new weekly segment is Ours to Protect host, Áine Gillespie.
Thanks, Louise. This is Ours to Protect, a brand new weekly feature on iRadio's The Hub. The very first week, so we're starting from scratch. But what do we want to protect? We want to protect our planet, our environment, and our future. And to do so, we'll be on a journey to learn as much as we can do, as little as changing to a reusable coffee cup or to growing your own vegetables. With this, we'll need some help. So I'll be getting some tips from activists, change makers, and people from all walks of life who are doing their bit for the planet and leading the cause to live more sustainably. We'll be discussing topics such as the climate impact on energy, travel, food, waste, the circular economy, biodiversity, and that's just to name a few. There's plenty more out there. This is a collaboration of local and regional broadcasters from across the country who have come together to tackle climate change, champion climate change, and inform and educate audiences all over Ireland about how we can make a difference. This segment is funded by the Commission na Mban, and for more, you can visit ourstoprotect.ie, and we'll be podcasting all episodes each week on iradio.ie/ourstoprotect. If you're not sure what's good and what's bad for the environment, Ours to Protect is the place to find out the small things we can change to make a big difference to our planet. And if you want to track your progress over the course of the year with the changes you make, I recommend checking out the Global Footprint Calculator. The Global Footprint measures how fast we consume resources and generate waste compared to how fast nature can absorb our waste and generate resources. If you want to find out what your global footprint is, head to iradio.ie/ours to protect. It's just a few simple questions like how far you travel to work every day, your energy consumption and your waste output, for example. The results will tell you a summary of how many Earths it would take to sustain your current lifestyle. And I have to admit, I found out my global footprint, and I'm very embarrassed to say that we need 8.9 Earths if everyone lived like me. The survey also shows your ecological footprint of how much land it would take to sustain your life, as well as carbon footprint in terms of emissions in tons per year. But it's important to remember that there are solutions to bring our footprint down, and that's why each week on Ours to Protect, we'll learn tips on how we can reduce our global footprint. And this week, to kick things off, we'll be talking all things food. Food, glorious food, and the dreaded food shop. Or maybe you love the food shop, heading down the middle aisles and having a gawk. Later, I'll be chatting about how the food in our lives can have a major impact on our global footprint. We'll catch up with Kate Egan, an environmental educator and education consultant, and Linda McFarland, a co-owner of Low & Co. Eco Grocer. Ours to Protect would also like you to take a survey to find out your thoughts on climate change and how we can deliver the content you want to hear. To take part in our survey, head to iradio.ie/ours to protect and you'll find the link there. But first, I ask these people in Maynooth, what is sustainability to you? What sustainable choices you make day to day? And if sustainability is a factor to consider when you're doing your food shop?
So what is sustainability to you?
It's all about kind of not using plastic and being more aware of the environment.
And would you make any sustainable choices in your daily life?
I try and avoid plastic and kind of recycle, be kind of big into recycling and stuff.
When you're doing your food shop, would you take sustainability into account?
Well, usually, given time constraints, like I have two young kids, so I'm usually running around, so I probably wouldn't be consciously kind of looking at different...
So is time your biggest factor when doing a food?
Yeah, it definitely is.
What is sustainability to you?
Pretty much trying to be as tight niche as possible. Like, for example, going out and instead of, you know, getting your takeaway coffee in the non-compostable plastic cups. Bring your keep cup, you know, sit in and have the coffee instead.
And when you're doing a food shop, would you take into account sustainability?
Yeah, actually now I've started to grow my own stuff at home.
So what do you grow at home?
So I've started growing carrots, tomatoes, chilies. I've gotten a basil plant that was already pre-grown in Tesco, brought it home, put it into a plant from Dublin originally. So all my family now are calling me a big culchie since moving down, basically. But like, again, it's so expensive now, so it's kind of just like, why not?
So what would you say the benefits are from growing your own food compared to shopping?
Well, basil is so expensive now. So it's even just the life of something is coming back now. So like the basil plant that I have at home has grown so much, and like in the shops, like you know, you buy a packet of basil and it'll go off like literally in a day, you know. So it's kind of like keeping the waste management kind of less.
So Niamh, what is sustainability to you?
Sustainability is using the resources of the earth in the best way possible for now and future generations.
And give us an example of something you would do sustainability wise in your everyday life.
Perhaps newspapers being recycled, coffee grounds being used in the garden, that kind of thing.
Fantastic. And when you're doing your food shop, would you ever consider sustainability when you're buying your groceries?
To be honest, no, I wouldn't. I'd like to think I do, but I actually don't.
So what's your main priority when you're doing your food shop?
Time.
What is sustainability to you, if you were to describe it?
It's a circle. The continuation of being able to just keep everything renewed.
And when you're doing your food shop, would you consider sustainability?
Yeah, bring it back. That's about it.
And what is the most important thing when you're doing a food shop? Like,
for me, it's convenience.
And does anything revolving climate change concern you? Or what is the most concerning thing about climate change?
Not completely. The science I've looked into, not completely sure whether we've got this one right, given the fluctuations in the Earth's climate over the since it's been here. So I don't know whether we're overreacting to it, but definitely we influence it, but I don't know whether it's because of us.
So how would you describe sustainability? Actions to help the environment?
We try to do not to use water, not too much. We try to clean environment from rubbish. We try to economize electricity. Do not create too many rubbish. I mean, do not buy lots of things because most of them will go to rubbish. We tried to buy just what we need for food or clothes, not too much. I'm talking about me. I don't know how it works with other people.
So what is sustainability to you?
Having a clue how to describe it. There we go.
Would you make any sustainable choices on your day-to-day life?
No.
Would you like to make a change in that?
Probably. Like, if I knew more about it, then I would try.
That's what the people of Maynooth think of sustainability and climate change. And once again, we'd love to know your thoughts on climate change also. So head over to iradio.ie/ours to protect to take part in our survey. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking about the food in our lives and how that has an impact on sustainability. We'll be chatting to Kate Egan, environmental educator and education consultant, and also Linda McFarland, co-owner of Low & Co. Eco Grocer.
Thanks, Anya. Here's a quick track. This is Laureen and Tattoo here on iRadio. If you want to comment on anything, you can give us a text on 087 1102 107. I'll catch up with Anya again in just a few minutes.
Ours to Protect on iRadio.
Now, if you've just joined us here on The Hub, you're listening to the very first episode of Ours to Protect. I'm joined in studio by Anya Gillespie, who is hosting our panel discussion this evening. Anya, you're doing a great job so far. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Louise. Joining us now for our panel discussion, we have Kate Egan and Linda McFarland. How are you, ladies?
Very well, thank you.
Good, yeah. Thanks for joining me
this evening. You have the pleasure of joining me on my very first week of Ours to Protect. What have I gotten myself in for?
Yeah, a rabbit hole is, you'll feel like Alice in Wonderland, I'd say, by the end of it. You'll be out in your Birkenstocks with, you know, hippie hair and all the rest of it, using the
back
compost
to
toilets.
Back to your roots, it'll be good.
Yeah, someone described it as Bridget Jones, and I can't wait to join up by under Bridget Jones. So, Kate, you are a environmental educator and educating consultant. You've worked with National Parks Wildlife Service, Irish Wildlife Trust, Leave No Trace, the list goes on. But mostly you have on Green Glass Farm. Mm-hmm. Am I pronouncing it right?
You are, you're doing very well. Yes. I like to get difficult names just to test people. So imagine, and the second name of the farm is Carrick na Gower. You can imagine that phone call getting anything posted. Yep, that's where my project at the moment is.
What is the project? Tell me all about it.
So it started off as I just fell in love with growing food, and when I got the keys to the house I was living in, I was made redundant that same week, and I thought, how hard can growing food be? Turns out it's very, very hard.
Don't tell me that.
No, to make a living, to turn it in from a business, because I was growing an awful lot for myself. I had surplus, I was selling a little bit to friends, and then I thought, oh sure, I can, you know, do this full time. And I did. I went and trained, and I trained with Jim Cronin, who's the king of market gardening in Ireland, over in Clare. And I had an up and coming market garden, and then I had a child, and it turns out that growing needs exactly the same amount of energy and time and commitment as having a child. So that's gone on pause now, and we're in the middle of trying to, I suppose, relaunch as kind of a tourism and food experience where people can come and pick their own and maybe do workshops and things. So hopefully that'll launch next year. But this year, I'm looking for candidates who would be interested in applying for a Grow Together farm experience. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So what is the Grow Together experience?
I'm inviting six people to come and grow on the farm. So the market garden is still there. It's getting a little overgrown, but the capacity for growing food is phenomenal. And actually, Linda and I have been chatting about like sustainable food systems around the area where we live. And we're going to feel that we want to try and find a way of bringing some more people in and creating a more sustainable system. So I'm inviting six people to come grow for the year. Put in one day a week and hopefully grow almost all of our food needs, certainly vegetables and potatoes and fruit. And there is a mature orchard and nut orchard and food forest that there'd also be a share of food from for the participating members as well. So you can contact me or via the website or an email and get more information there if you're interested.
Fantastic. And now we'll cross over to Linda McFarland. Linda, you are the co-owner of Low & Co, which is an eco-grocer. When someone steps foot into Low & Co, what are they getting?
I suppose our style is quite traditional, so it's a bit of a throwback to, you know, how simple things were. You know, our ancestors, our grandparents ate organically without there being a name on it. That's what food was prior to 1950s, when chemicals really, you know, kind of came on board. So natural food without the chemicals. We're very careful what we buy in. We try and buy from local people as much as possible. We'd like to buy from more local people if there was more being produced. But my background is nutrition, and that's why we set it up initially, because I was recommending organic, well, chemical-free vegetables and fruit and dairy and meats and sourdough bread and, you know, organic eggs to people, but they were finding it hard to source them. So that's why we set up 7 years ago. We set up our little shop, myself and my partner.
Fantastic. And in case you're not hungry enough, we're going to talk even more about food. And we're going to talk mainly on food sustainability. So Kate, can you explain to me, what is food sustainability?
Oh, it's such a big, vast question. I think you need to divide it into two. So there's the sustainability around the environment. So creating food systems that treat the land in a way that it becomes a renewable resource and not a finite resource. Unfortunately, we have sort of like the frog in the warm water being boiled up. I don't know if you know that analogy, where it doesn't jump out when it's warmed up slowly. We've sort of shifted, like from where Linda's talking about, where everything was organic, we've slowly, bit by bit, started to treat our agricultural systems as though they are finite resources, or we've treated them in such a way that they're becoming finite resources, to do with the water pollution, soil pollution, soil loss is just such a huge one, and the biodiversity loss that's associated with very intensive agriculture, agri policies and practices, and unfortunately they're widespread within Ireland. So that's one aspect of food sustainability. Then you have food security, so trying to make sure that we have and are producing enough food for ourselves within Ireland, but also that we're producing food that is healthy for us. So unfortunately we've had a degradation of the quality of our food. And this isn't to say the quality of produce, because in Ireland, you know, we do produce high quality food and it goes out. However, it's because the soil is degrading as we're producing it, we're ending up with nutrient loss within the food, if that makes sense. So we end up with food that's actually not sustaining our bodies in the same way that it really needs to. And then we end up finding that we have health issues and different things. And we're intaking huge amount of pesticides and you know, chemicals through the intake of our food. So there's sort of the personal sustainability about like how we sustain our bodies and keep ourselves healthy, and that's embedded within the wider system. So there's sort of like connected feedback loop. So one kind of feeds into the other, but they're not always, sometimes they can be mutually exclusive.
Okay. And as an owner of the farm shop, Linda, what challenges do you find supplying locally sourced food?
I suppose, you know, it's a seasonal thing. You know, we have a glut of, we were talking about this yesterday, myself and Kate, we've got a glut of tomatoes and courgettes and pumpkins, you know. Around harvest time, autumn is a great time for produce, but the rest of the year, it's hard to get locally. You know, there's not that much growing, really. You know, a bit of kale, a bit of cabbage during the winter. So we have to import, you know, a lot of stuff. And, you know, I was saying earlier on as well that, you know, we can't get organic butter or organic cream in this country. Nobody's producing it.
And we have so many dairy farms.
I know, yeah. I know. And people will pay a good price for organic butter. I mean, unfortunately, I have to bring it in from France at the moment. And it's, you know, $4.95 retail for, you know, 250 gram block. So there is, and I sell a lot of it, you know, so there are opportunities for local producers and local farmers. You know, we need to produce more in this country, really. It's quite scary that we're not producing enough.
Yeah. Does it kind of break your heart in a way that it gets exported?
Yes, yeah. When I did a chefing course in Athlone IT, and we had somebody in from Bordish Guara, I remember one day, and you know, he was coming in to talk to us about fish, but he told us that our best fish is being exported to Spain, Italy, France. You know, we just get what's left over, really. But the consumers, the customers need to demand, you know, good quality food, really, and need to prioritise good quality food.
I'm very lucky that I grew up by the sea. Yeah. Donegal, of course, not too far from Killybegs, which is the largest fishing export in Ireland. Yeah. Have to squeeze that in there. But even when Dad and his friends go out and they catch a couple of mackerel, like, even the smell in the house, like, the difference, the smell will actually be in the house for a few days, but the taste,
so good.
It just tastes completely different to shop-bought fish.
Yeah.
So, Kate, in terms of Ireland, how are we doing when it comes to producing our own food?
I think there's a lot to be concerned about, but, you know, I think there's also a huge grassroots movement for better food. And actually, you know, it's kind of what you've just touched on there when you're talking about the mackerel at home, because I think we talk about food experiences now, particularly in the tourism industry. You know, people are seeking out the food experience, but it's because we're seeking connection to where our food comes from. And actually, Linda may even be able to speak on this, is because food that's from where we live actually benefits our bodies better. It helps us be more resistant to the colds and the flus and the pests and things that might be in that area. Our bodies are healthier based on it. And there's something about, there's around, you know, this kind of a nature connection element too. And there's an amazing woman, Lucy O'Hagan, who's working on a wild food project at the moment, the Wild Food Biome, I think it is, if anyone wants to look it up. And she has talked about like the relationship she has with her landscape as a result of foraging food for 3 months purely living on that, which, I mean, isn't like, I'm not suggesting everyone go out and do that, because that's serious dedication, and you know, you'd spend 90% of your time working on it. But Ireland on the big scale, on the policy scale, there are brilliant people working behind the scenes trying to work on this. So I'm part of a network called Farming for Nature, and they have a fantastic project called From the Horse's Mouth. If anyone's interested, it's a mentorship program that any farmers that are interested in learning some more regenerative ways of farming, but mainly how to make space for nature on their farms, can connect in with that. But the farmers that are all involved in the network, they're incredibly forward thinking. They have managed to increase their yields, or certainly increase their profit margin, by changing and coming off off of chemicals and synthetic fertilizers altogether. But it's taken a process, and it's a change of mindset, and it does take time. And there's a lot of people who are wrapped up in huge debt and loans, who can't take those risks. So there's a real human element to it as well. You know, we start to have this conversation, I think, in the media an awful lot, that farming is getting hugely slammed. And as a staunch environmentalist, coming initially, I think that we're forgetting something in this space too, you know, where we talk about things like climate change and the emissions around cows and that sort of thing. And this is a contentious area, but we do have to recognise the human element. And these are people who are producing food that we need to survive. And the more that we can support them to bettering their practices. And most people don't want to be wearing masks when they're going out and spraying fields. You know, they see what's happening. They see how they're damaging their fields. But sometimes you can't see the woods for the trees, and you have to have that moment. So all the farmers within the Farming for Nature network have often been through that journey and can speak eloquently on it, and we can start to see the grassroots things are changing and shifting. There is a long, long way to go.
I might just bring you back to getting to know your area better. We've heard it, especially at this time, hay fever. Crazy at the moment. Yeah. Eyes are itching, nose are runny. Local honey, what does that do?
Glint actually might speak better on this.
Well, it's great for, again, what Kate was saying about choosing foods that are from your local area. You know, the bees, local honey from local bees, you know, it's the same pollen, and it helps to build up our immunity, so it helps to protect us against hay fever. So it's a good idea to start taking honey, you know, a few months before hay fever season. But there's other things that you can take as well, like elderflowers. The wild foods are brilliant. Kate was talking about Lucy O'Hagan and her whole gut flora, apparently. There's been tests done on that. When you consume wild foods from your area, that your gut bacteria changes in a positive way. Local foods, local honey is brilliant. I support local beekeepers, you know, natural beekeepers.
And of course, the bees are helping us with our hay fever. But how do we help the bees? We hear save the bees morning, noon and night. But how can we do it?
Yeah, let's stop using pesticides and herbicides. They're destroying the bees' gut flora, and they also destroy our own gut flora as well. So I cringe when I see somebody spraying at the side of the road or something. I'm involved in Suck Valley Beekeepers, and a lot of beekeepers out there have lost hives because their neighbours have sprayed dandelions, which are the first food for the bees in the springtime, with glyphosate, and it's just hugely destructive. You know, it's the first thing that we can do. You know, stop spraying chemicals, restore the soil, and you know, it's good for us and it's good for the bees.
Personally, I'm not going out with my tank on my back and the little, I don't even know what you call it, but I'm not spraying the pesticides. But what am I doing that's encouraging people to spread pesticides?
I think it comes back to this idea that, like, we don't have bad people, we have bad systems, and we've fallen into habits. And when one of the big things too around our behaviour is where we become mix our the things that we do with our identity. And in some areas where it's like, no, it's summer and I spray, you know, and that's it, and that's just because it's kind of become part of my routine and part of how I interact with my park or my local area. So it's a real mindset shift. And, you know, the more, I suppose, one, having the conversation is important. Two, buying and supporting local keepers. Also, in a very gentle way, you know, asking some, if you do see someone spraying, or you know, like say you're on a project or managing a park, or you're part of the county council or town council from where you're from, or school environment, that, you know, just be the person. And yes, everyone's going to roll your eyes at you. I'm not, you know, that's what it is, and you stick your head out. It does, and I have been the brunt of it many times, and but in a very kind of, in a non-threatening, judgmental way, because we have to remember too, like, no one's doing it, they're doing it because they think it might make their life easier, they need to manage this, or they feel stressed at the sight of something looking untidy. So looking and searching for alternatives, and figuring out what actually the issue is, and maybe how can we address it, rather than just jumping straight into, we spray because it's this time of the year. So having the conversation, putting your hand up, asking, is there an alternative, there's something else we could do, saying maybe I would prefer maybe the area around my school wasn't, or hey, we know there's a beekeeper down there, could we maybe leave that, could we get that cut a bit later. For watching, if you're going to sow flowers, if you've got a garden, making sure the flowers ideally are Irish grown. There's wildflowers.ie, they produce all Irish grown seed, because we are bringing in seed from other countries, and with all this kind of madness for the wildflowers. And the other thing that sometimes recommended when sowing wildflowers is to till, because they can succeed in like poor soil, so you dig it up and you grow them. The challenge with that is then actually what you're doing is you're having some soil loss as well, because every time you dig the soil, you release carbon, and you end up the soil drying out, you reduce the microbiology of the soil, so all the organisms and tiny things that live in there have been impacted, some have died, and they have to recolonize. So by reducing that and finding other ways and tips and tricks, like no dig methods, will really help with that as well.
If there's someone out there that sees something and they think it's a weed, instead of spraying it, what do they do?
Pull it, or put vinegar down to kill them off, and that makes it easier. Then, and it works. Yeah. And salt.
Yeah. If I was to go do my normal food shop, sometimes I'm just in a rush and I'm scrambling to try and make something that's quick, because some of us don't have the time, and some of us, our finances are different. So what kind of tips do you have for me when I'm doing my food shop to be more sustainable?
So I think of it like kind of like a flow chart or a hierarchy. It's kind of how my mind works a little bit, you know. So like the best and ideal, right, is, you know, buy local, chemical free the best and ideal is to grow it yourself in your back garden. But we all know we're like, not everyone has the time, the energy, the interest, or the space to do that, right? So there's a practicality to some of these things about how we make our decisions. And no one goes out to contribute to climate change by buying a cheap bag of carrots. You know, they're hungry and tired and they want to go home and make their dinner, and that is completely understandable. But making the best choices we can, and then supporting the local economies and the people who are doing things well where possible. It would be better if everyone did a blend of these things rather than a few people just all do the best thing, you know. So you would start with growing it yourself, then you would kind of go buying like local, from somewhere like a shop like Linda's, or direct from a farmer. But then you say, okay, look, I really don't have the luxury of that time to find those shops or to go in there, and I'm in a big supermarket now, what's the best I can do? You have a choice of buying either local or organic. If you buy local, you're probably reducing things like the effects on climate change in terms of the food miles it's travelled. If you buy organic, you're reducing the pesticides and herbicides you've taken, and any kind of environmental damage, you know, there is a reduction in environmental damage from organic foods as well. So it's, you know, you come down the ladder as in where you can see. So grow it yourself if you can. Maybe one of the best things you could grow, or probably one of the easiest things, is salads. Most of our salads travel 13,000 kilometers to get to our plate on average. That's, you know, just your bag of salad leaf that you're buying down in, like, you know, the supermarket. That's how far it's traveling. Whereas if you know, and the price difference is, but like, you know, it's so, one bag of salad leaves that would do you for an entire year will cost you about $2.99. Little bit of compost might cost you a fiver, and you will grow so much. You know, you probably grow €100 worth of salad with it, realistically.
You won't.
And that's sometimes where people do often get frustrated as well, around things like growing for themselves, because they can feel like there's a lot of waste. Well, why did I put all that energy into buying it, you know? But there's a lot of other, you know, we can go into compost, and every bit that we grow, and if we compost it, actually becomes carbon sequestration. That's what you're doing right there, because you have taken carbon out of the air to make that vegetable, and then that goes into this compost, which goes into the soil. That's it. You're helping climate change. It's a tiny amount, but every little bit helps, as they say. But I think also, you know, we are, there's kind of, there's space as well for a call for our government and local governments to step in, because, you know, having access to land to grow food, I think, is vitally important and a right that people should have if they wish to grow it. Mm-hmm. So that's one way in terms of, yeah, the cost of living crisis. Granted, if you're working, you know, a 5-day or 40-hour week or more, it might not be something that's feasible for you. But if you're not and you're finding the pinch and you have a bit of time rather than money, growing it is a great option. Mm-hmm. But we also need to look for supports for the farmers that are producing this stuff really well and contributing. You know, there are changes happening in policy. The government have a role in this too, to support farmers that are trying to do things right, and food, to encourage food that's been grown really well, and make it more accessible for people.
Plants can go out of the control and you could be growing far more than you actually need. So Linda, what can I do with the extra?
Well, yeah, I mean, make sauces, make jams, chutneys, you know, use everything up. A good homesteader will use everything, won't they? So preservation was always key, really, traditionally, wasn't it, to using things and reducing waste. Smoothies are great, soups and stews, you know, try to use it all.
And giving to people too.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Everyone loves some homegrown produce, don't they? Yeah, or a jar of rhubarb jam, or, you know, yeah.
So, Kate, you are very passionate about introducing food sustainability to everyone else, and you're working with the Technological University of the Shannon. Tell me all about it.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's where Linda studied. It's with the culinary department, culinary and tourism department there. There is an unbelievably innovative team there, and we have actually just planted a food forest, and they have developed essentially what's a tiny small market garden of no dig, organic, chemical-free vegetables that will supply the culinary kitchen. And they're actually putting in a composting system as well, so that they will manage the food waste that comes out of the kitchen, and it will feed and be nutrients for the garden. And this is all thanks to some amazing funding that came from SATL, the Strategic Alignment of Teaching and Learning, and the National Forum in partnership with the Higher Educational Authority, and then NutriTour. But these wonderful programs have allowed us to take this project and create this learner experience, and then also this kind of sustainability and curiosity garden within the university. And people will be able to walk through it, and eventually it'll be sort of like a wild space. There'll be an area for foraging, and there'll be an area for food and, you know, orchard and that kind of thing. And people can go and pick and smell and see and taste and touch. So it's really kind of at the forefront of food sustainability within the area. It's very exciting.
Yeah, and for people who aren't in that area and they want to get involved in maybe community groups, how do they do that?
Brilliant. So, like, there's actually loads. In Dublin, there's the Dublin Community Gardens. You can look up and see where's nearby you, or, you know, there's quite a number, and there's actually funding if you feel very kind of energetic and want to get one started. There's GIY, Grow It Yourself program, that's all over the country. You can get in touch with local places. A lot of primary schools actually have gardens for the children and need people to help with them, volunteer, and over the summer especially, to look after them. Or your local community centre will often have horticulture courses and things like that. And then just, you know, even, for example, the National Biodiversity Data Centre, if growing isn't your thing, you can get involved with kind of nature and sustainability through doing some records for them if you're interested in wildlife. And then cooperatives, so like there's the Dublin Food Co-op, and if anyone's particularly keen, I know myself and Linda are having a chat about like a Midlands Co-op or something like that, so we're in talks. If anyone wants to get in touch.
Great. Can't wait to get involved, and I don't know about you, but I'm absolutely starving after all the talk about food. So thank you so much to Kate Egan, environmental educationalist, and Linda McFarland of Low & Co. Eco Grocer, for joining us on our first episode of Ours to Protect.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by iRadio, the IBI, and funded by Commissioner Naman with a television license fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more info.